Welcome, spooky friends, spooky patrons.
Yay, spooky patron time.
It's spooky patron time.
Spooky patron time. My spooky patron time.
Hope you guys are doing great.
I look forward to our bonus episodes every month just because I know that there's actually people that are paying to listen to extras from us, which I think is just the coolest thing possible.
And we are super happy to give you those extras. We have fun recording them. When we do these patron episodes, we get to talk about things we don't always get to talk about on the regular show. And that's a lot of fun.
And it's all thanks to you guys, because you guys actually voted on today's episode.
You did. We gave you some unusual cryptids to choose from, and the two that you settled on in the poll were the Wampus Cat and the Tanawa. Of course, Cat is going to talk about the cat.
My distant cousin, of course.
Indeed, indeed. And I will talk about the Tanawa in New Zealand. So Cat, tell us about the cat.
Yes, ma'am. So the Wampus Cat is mostly known from Cherokee legends. Since then, it's evolved just like any other legend. It, you know, evolves, it moves. It's like Bigfoot, and the Wampus Cat just wanders all over the place. However, today we're going to focus mostly on the Appalachian origin, because that's where it originated from.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Wampus Cat, also known as the Wampus Beast, the Cherokee Death Cat, also known in Missouri as the Gallywampus. In Arkansas, it's called the Whistling Wampus. But in the Appalachians, it's just the plain old Wampus Cat.
That cat gets around.
Right? I know, like I told you, cats travel, man. It's depicted as a half-dog, half-cat creature. Some say that it's all cat. It's been seen to walk on two legs, but it mostly runs or walks on all fours. Most people see it just before dawn or right after dark. The most common features that the Wampus Cat have, regardless of who you talk to, is that it's said to be a howling, evil creature. It has yellow eyes that can pierce through the hearts and souls of those unfortunate enough to cross its path. And if you look into the eyes of the Wampus Cat, it will drive you to the edge of sanity.
I mean, that checks out. It's a cat, so, you know.
Yeah. Anyone who actually owns a cat or knows cats, you know, you look into those eyes and you can just feel that they're judging you constantly and will probably murder you in your sleep.
And we're just going to go ahead and call your cat out right now, Crowley, because we recorded this already and he stepped on something on the computer and possibly deleted the whole thing. So now we're recording it a second time. So thanks,
take two.
Kitty cat.
Yeah. I got my very own Wampus Cat that is driving me to the edge of sanity. So you guys can just be aware of that. Of course, yeah. My husband would say that this is all my fault because I'm the one that chose to bring it inside the house and unleash the terror within the house. He could have just stayed outside, but
it's their cuteness. It draws us in.
Damn cuteness. There are days that I regret my decisions. But today I'm going to tell you guys a Native American Cherokee story of how the Wampus Cat came to be in the Appalachian Mountains. Or if you're from that area, I know a lot of people pronounce it Appalachia Mountains. I'm from the West Coast and we say Appalachian. All right, so I'm going to tell you guys a little story here, so just stick with me. It's going to be good. An evil demon called Awa, the spirit of madness, had been terrorizing the village of Etowah. in what is today's North Carolina. The village shamans and war chiefs called for a meeting. The wise shamans told the war chiefs that sending the braves to hunt and kill Awa was surely going to be the end of the tribe, for Awa had the terrible power to drive men mad with a glance. The war chiefs argued that Awa could no longer feast on the dreams of the Cherokee children and that something must be done. Together, they agreed that the strongest brave would go alone and bring great honor to his family and tribe by killing the mad demon. Standing Bear was the strongest, fastest, sneakiest, smartest, and most respected brave in all the Cherokee Nation, and he was chosen to do battle with the demon. As he walked from his village, the shamans blessed him, and the war chiefs gave him many fine weapons with which to slay the beast. And on the edge of town, his wife, Running Deer, bid him a final farewell. She would never see him the same way again. Weeks went by, and there was no word from Standing Bear. Suddenly, late one night, the stricken brave came running back into camp, screaming and clawing at his eyes. One look and Running Deer knew her husband was no more. With time, he would be able to pick berries and work in the fields with the young girls and the widows, but he would never be any good as a husband again. And by Cherokee law, that meant he was dead. Standing Bear's name was never again mentioned, but Running Deer had loved her husband and she wanted revenge. Running Deer went to the shamans and they gave her a booger mask. I know what you did. Booger? Excuse me?
That's gross.
It is actually spelled B-O-O-G-E-R, but it originated as a mask that imitated evil spirits, and it was either made from wood or hornet's nests, which I thought was pretty cool. And initially, it was worn to scare away evil spirits just before the spring rains, so that way the evil spirits would not stop the rains from coming, so that their crops would have a good harvest for that that season.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thought on this, is that they're giving her scary mask essentially to go scare this evil demon. The booger mask was of a bobcat's face, and they told her that the spirit of the mountain cat could stand against the Awa, but she must be the one to surprise the demon. The war chiefs gave her a special black paste, Wen, which rubbed on her body would hide her scent as well as her being. So it kind of made her invisible.
Wow.
She kissed her former husband on the forehead, his blank eyes staring, and headed off to seek her revenge. Running Deer knew the woods as well as she knew the village, and she ate sweet berries to keep up her strength over the many days. But still, she came across no signs of Awa. Then, late one night, she heard a creature stalking down by the stream. As she crept slowly towards the creek, she heard a twig snap behind her. She spun and just as suddenly realized how quickly it could have been the end of her. Behind her, a wily fox darted across the pathway. If that had been Awa, I would be mad now, the widow Cherokee thought to herself as she continued to walk towards the creek. At the edge of the creek, she saw footprints which did not belong there, and her former husband's breastplate lay at the edge of the water. As she followed the prince upstream, she saw the demon. Its hulking form lurched hideously over the water, drinking from the pristine mountain spring. The Awa hadn't seen her. Running Deer crept ever closer, and just as she felt she could bring herself no closer, she sprang. The Awa spun and saw the cat spirit mask and began to tear at itself as the spirit of the mountain cat turned its powerful magic back on itself. The Awa tumbled backwards into the pool, and Running Deer immediately turned on her heel and ran as fast as she could back to the village, never once looking back. When she arrived home, she sang a song to herself, a quiet song of grief for her husband, but also of joy for the demon's banishment. The shamans and war chiefs declared Running Deer the spirit talker and home protector. Some say that the spirit of Running Deer inhabits the Wampus Cat, and that she continues her eternal mission of watching her tribe's land to protect them and their peoples from the demons that hide in the dark and lost places of Ta-Nehisi.
That's a cool story.
I kind of thought so. Like, yeah, sure. It's like, okay, well, so she's the Wampus, her spirit inhabits the Wampus Cat now, but of course the Wampus Cat is stalking around, causing disruption in neighborhoods and stuff. So we're like, wait, so you're doing the same thing? But if you think about it, that was originally their land. And so she, you know, her spirit could just be thinking like, hey, I need to protect my land kind of thing.
That's true.
And these could be invaders.
I didn't think of it that way the first time I heard it, but that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like it. I'm down with it. I feel like tribal stories and like all these folklore from Indian beliefs and stuff are always so interesting.
Super interesting.
Love it. And I'm actually going to be reading something similar to you guys for my Taniwa. I hope I'm saying that right. If anybody's in New Zealand and I'm butchering these names, I'm super sorry. So I'm going to tell you about the Taniwa in New Zealand. The Taniwa is a water-dwelling supernatural monster that can live in lakes or the sea. It sometimes disguises itself as a giant eel, like if it's in a lake or something. But if it's in the ocean, it will disguise itself as a whale or a shark, like a really big one.
Hence the reason I don't go into the ocean, just putting that out there.
Same. Most of the time, its purpose is to kidnap women to keep as its wife. So why an eel would want a human as a wife, I don't really know, but that's what they are into. So,
why does anyone want a human wife? Let's just be honest. Maybe eel wives are way worse.
Maybe. Maybe they're too ornery. Sorry, that was my Southern coming out. Ornery. You're living in Alabama now. You probably hear that all the time.
Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the interesting thing that I found out is in New Zealand, there actually is a type of eel that's really large that is possibly considered one of the largest in the world, if not the largest. And it lives in New Zealand lakes. So I kind of feel like maybe that's what spurred this whole legend on.
I believe that.
Yeah, this eel is called the longfin eel. And it gets roughly 6.5 feet long.
My husband's 6'3", so I can admit that's a big eel.
Yeah, it's a big eel. It's kind of a big freaking eel, so sorry. That was bad. Lord. So, and they have other types of eels in New Zealand, too. They have the short fin eel and also the Australian long fin eel. They have both of those there, too. So, yeah, a lot of eels. And they're often mistaken for, like, tree trunks and logs and stuff. Because, you know, they get on the surface and do their little eel thing.
Any of the eels or the big eel?
All of them. Like, they, okay. Yeah, that's, they're often mistaken for parts of trees.
Kind of like alligators.
Yes, that is also a thing that happens. Tribal groups in New Zealand see these Taniwa as actual guardians who will ward off enemies and guard things like ancestral items or people. They're also said to save people from drowning. And another thing the tribal groups believe is if you've had dealings with a Taniwa, I guess by dealings they mean like if you've spoken to one. You know, because they're supposed to be entities that can speak to you. If you have dealings with one, you will eventually turn into one.
I can believe that because in Irish folklore, if you have any sort of dealings with the Fae, you're doomed.
Yeah, those Fae are rascals.
That's one word for it.
So, yeah, it's interesting that the tribal groups see them as kind of a good thing, guardians and saving people from drowning and such. But then other people are like, oh, no, they're evil. They'll steal your women and kill you. And
see, they're just trying to protect their stuff.
Yeah. One of the articles I read interviewed this guy that was some kind of a forest ranger type guy that worked near a lake. And he said in the interview that there are certain lakes that are restricted in New Zealand specifically because they are believed to have a Taniwha in them. And I found that to be intriguing. So I did some research and I tried to figure out which lakes specifically are restricted for that reason. And I could not find any. So I don't know if that means that he was blowing smoke.
I think he may just want to be keeping the best fishing spots for, you know, him and his buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good theory. That's a good theory.
But maybe there is a giant mythological eel living in there that's going to snatch you down if you are a lady.
Maybe. Ooh, it's a lady. Yeah, so I tried to figure it out. Couldn't find them. Maybe it's that the locals just don't go there because they believe that. Maybe it's not like officially restricted, but like locals know not to tread there or whatever. I don't know. So I did find one lake that has a really cool story behind it.
Okay.
And it is Lake Wakatipu. So this is the legend of Lake Wakatipu.
I'm ready.
Long ago, before the promise of gold brought Pakea to Otago, the Maori roamed the land, hunting for moa and greenstone and eels. Manata and Matakari, two star-crossed lovers, lived in a village in the area. The couple were not allowed to marry as Manata was the daughter of the chief and Matakari was a commoner. One night, a giant Taniwha named Matau stole into the village and kidnapped Manata. He carried her away to his lair in the hills and tied her to him with a magical cord. Manata's father was distraught. He asked the young men of the village to go and save Manata, offering her in marriage to whomever brought her home safely. The young men were afraid, but Matakari, who loved Manata with all his heart, followed the northwest wind to the still young mountains where the giant lived. He found Matau asleep, and Manata lashed next to him. When Matakari was unable to cut the enchanted cords, Manata begged him to go, fearing that the giant would wake up and kill him. Matakari refused to leave her, but as Manata began to cry, the love in her tears dissolved her bonds and they escaped.
Aww.
I know, right? Matakari brought Manata back to the village, and the couple were allowed to be married. Later, fearing that Matau would return to cause more trouble, Matakari went back to the mountains where the monster lived. He found the giant sleeping, lulled by the warm wind, and he set a great fire around him. The hot wind caused the flames to roar violently, and the Taniwha's body burned so long and so hot that a trough hundreds of meters deep and 75 kilometers long was created. After Matakari left, the rains came and filled the newly formed valley with water, which is now known as Wakatipu, the trough of the giant. Although the giant has been dead for many long years, his heartbeat can still be seen in the steady rise and fall of the beautiful lake that is his resting place.
Cool. That is a good story.
I guess there is a trench there. And they believe that that is formed because of this story.
I always thought it was so cool how the indigenous tribes can come up with stories to explain things in such an eloquent way.
Yeah, that's a human thing. Like, humans have been doing that forever. Mm-hmm. So it's just that these tribes are really good at it. Like, their stories are really cool. That's the Tanawa in New Zealand.
Good job, Kiwis. You got a good story going on there with the giant eel.
So you guys wanted unusual cryptids that you probably had never heard about? There you go. We delivered.
And of course, if you want to see more of what we were reading about and see our resources, links will always be in the description.
Yes, indeed they will. So until next time, we'll spook you later.